From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 66 of Little Brother for January 1st, 2022. Happy New Year! Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Strap in, we've got some catching up to do. Clearview AI is a New York-based database and software publisher that specializes in facial recognition. Clearview makes available for subscription a database of facial recognition data that they have compiled from publicly available sources, with law enforcement as the primary audience. The database contains over 3 billion with a B images collected from the internet and indexed, a practice that has earned them cease and desist letters from the likes of Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook back around the start of 2020. Well, now they have a new legal order from the French National Privacy Regulator, the Commission Nationale de l'Informatique et des Libertés, or the National Commission of Computers and Liberties, CNIL for short. The regulator believes that Clearview AI's practices are in violation of the European General Data Protection Regulation, which some of my listeners will no doubt recognize as the GDPR. In response to this belief, the CNIL have ordered Clearview AI to delete all of the data that they have collected on French citizens joining Australia in making such a demand. A viral post is making the rounds on social media showing a picture of a Tesla Model 3 on a towing dolly. With it, the text reads, "I have a friend who is a repo agent. Tesla hired him to get his car. Tesla located the car through GPS, backed it out, unlocked it, and hunked it to make it easier for my friend to hook it up." It goes on to speculate that when the self-driving feature of the car improves, that cars will actually be able to simply drive themselves back to Tesla. Now, it goes without saying that you should pay your bills. But what happens if Tesla makes a mistake? What happens if Tesla gets hacked? What happens if Tesla sends a car with its owner into the hands of a government that has gone wrong? As this is, it's probably reasonable, but the security threat that this represents to individuals is a little bit more than I find comfortable. Well, Log4j is the gift that just keeps on giving. After 2 rounds of patching, yet another vulnerability has been published. And as with the last 2 rounds, it's still an arbitrary code execution hole. Now, the good news is that in this case, it's necessary for an attacker to control the LDAP server being used with the targeted machine. But this is how pivots happen. Of course, as is so often the case, there are likely a number of unpatched systems still in existence, which has led listener Azrael to suggest that perhaps QR codes might be a way to infiltrate the attack code into a system, in a manner very similar to the attack I described in episode 46, where a virus test code is encoded into a QR barcode, causing systems that scan the code to sometimes exhibit an allergic reaction. The difference is, of course, that in this case, it's not an allergic reaction, but an actual attack. Of course, you all know what needs to be done about that. Patch your systems! In the last episode, I mentioned that the Public Health Agency of Canada was looking to purchase real-time cell tower location data for purposes of tracking the movements of Canadian citizens during the pandemic. All in the name of pandemic control. The Toronto Sun is reporting that they actually already have it. The Public Health Agency has admitted that it has tracked the movements of around 33 million Canadian citizens using the data in an effort ostensibly to understand the public's responsiveness to pandemic control measures, such as lockdowns. The directive was disclosed in order to be open and transparent. To be blunt, it seems like they might have considered such openness and transparency from the outset. For what it's worth, the agency intends to keep the program going for up to 5 more years, and the government has yet to legislate any related privacy safeguards. There are folks who believe that simply encrypting data is sufficient to keep it safe from abuse. While encryption is important, it is not sufficient. Encryption is used in web browsers for many things, amongst them keeping saved data, including any passwords that you may have stored in your browser. An information-stealing malware called Redline has demonstrated the folly of using the browser-based password managers. The malware can acquire your passwords by accessing the data where it lives outside of the encrypted envelope. It's able to capture usernames, passwords, cookies, and autofill data from Chromium-based browsers, including Chromium, Chrome, Brave, Opera, and Edge. For this reason, I highly recommend not storing sensitive data in your browser, especially usernames, passwords, and payment methods. Of course, minding where you browse may help as well. But why not do both? Demonstrating that people are starting to get the idea of privacy, search engine DuckDuckGo has had a record year in 2021. Again. DuckDuckGo carried out 23.6 billion queries, that's billion with a B, in 2020. As of this writing, the data for 2021 are not complete, but the number is expected to be around 34.6 billion searches. DuckDuckGo is currently in the number 6 position for search engines, behind Yandex, Yahoo, are they yet living? Baidu, Bing, and of course, Google. What sets them aside from the competition is that DuckDuckGo is focused on privacy. They do not litter the internet and their search results with bugs and trackers to figure out your every move on the internet. Rather, letting the search results, the ostensible product of a search engine, to be its source of revenue. For the record, this is also my search engine of choice. Redditor Nebuchadnezzar posted an observation to Our Privacy that the latest version of the TikTok app on their iPhone is looking for permission to connect to devices on the local network. Some apps have a good reason to do this. For instance, a companion app to a streaming device might use it both to allow you to use it as a remote control and also to stream audio for quiet stream viewing. However, TikTok has no legitimate interest in poking around on your LAN. As with other social media, I'd suggest just not using it, but if you need to for some reason, isolation is key. I know, for instance, that my daughter uses TikTok, and this, along with other threats that I might not yet have identified, is the reason why she has her own Wi-Fi segment on my home network. China has filed a complaint with the United Nations concerning SpaceX and their Starlink satellite internet service. Much like China's Tianhe space station, Starlink's satellites operate in a low Earth orbit, one in which the orbital speed does not align with the movement of the planet before. Considering the broad spectrum of altitudes at which such an orbit can be achieved, it is stunning to me that Starlink and Tianhe would end up on the same potential orbit and therefore potential collision courses. China have asked that the UN Secretary General remind the nations of the world of their obligations under international space law. However, they have not stated any concrete actions that they are requesting. Ironically, the name Tianhe means harmony of the heavens, which seems not to be what this nation's space station is presently causing. Perhaps a change in orbital altitude of one or the other can be arranged. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. And you know what that music means. It's time for another episode of Who Got Pwnt This Week? Or Fortnite, as the case may be, since I took last week off for the holiday. Well, we've got five of them this time around, so I'm going to crank through these quickly. A GitHub user who goes by WideVineDump has published code that will allow you to download video from several popular streaming services. In high definition, of course. The code defeats the DRM software used by these services, including Disney+, Netflix, and Amazon Prime Video, amongst others. So I'm going to say all of them have been pwnt. Sega Europe is next on the list. Apparently, security researcher Aaron Phillips found an Amazon S3 bucket that contained the keys to the Sega Kingdom, quite literally. Contained in the S3 bucket were multiple sets of keys to the AWS components of Sega's infrastructure. This is the digital equivalent of putting the key to your front door under the welcome mat. The Belgian Ministry of Defense had their network taken down for several days because of an attack after a security hole was discovered. This was a Log4j-based attack and took down many of their internal systems, including the ministry's email. Numerous users of LastPass are reporting that their master passwords have been compromised. Well, it seems like LastPass itself might not have been compromised, but rather that the user accounts have been by way of users reusing passwords from site to site. I'm honestly not sure why a user who is conscientious enough to use a password manager would also reuse a password, but this is what we seem to have here. Obviously, in such a case, two-factor authentication would be sufficient to thwart the attack, and indeed it was. Finally, surprising nobody, T-Mobile has been pwnt. Again. At least this time, the impact was much smaller than the one back in August. Only a small number of subscribers were impacted, and the impact was that some customers lost control of their personally identifiable information, and others were on the receiving end of a SIM swap. There is nothing like artificial scarcity to increase profit margins. As we've discussed in episode 64, internet connections do not snap under load. When you purchase an internet connection, the data should flow at the specified speed without other limitations. If the infrastructure is up to the task of carrying the data at that speed at any time, then it is up to the task of carrying it all the time. Data caps are not necessary to the operation of the internet. As I've mentioned before, I'm lucky enough to live in a place where there is competition between internet providers. Strangely enough, neither of the two providers in this area has a data cap. Go figure. I can't believe that either one of them is failing to turn a profit because both of them are still in business. So let's take that as People's Exhibit A. As People's Exhibit B, I offer you statements made by Sonic.net CEO Dane Jasper and Suddenlink CEO Jerry Kent that the cost of actually delivering service has declined much faster than the rate of usage has increased. For instance, Sonic.net spent about 20% of its revenue on infrastructure in 2008 versus only 1.6% 8 years later in 2016. So no, data caps are not warranted. In most areas served by Comcast Xfinity Internet, customers have suffered under data caps since 2016. The company planned to extend the caps to a dozen more states this year. However, after meeting customer resistance, they have postponed those data caps until 2023. Now, why would they cap the data in the first place? Well, the answer is simple. For an upcharge of just $30 a month, you can free yourself from it. That's why. Or you can pay $10 for every 50 gigabytes after you pass the limit. Meanwhile, here in Schenectady, $40 gets you fully unlimited data, and yet the ISPs still turn a profit. So when your ISP tells you,
"Stop all the downloading,"
you know they're full of it.
Let's go back to the initial cause. I'll be careful because the investigation's over and it's now in the prosecutor's hands.
Oh no, not this idiot again. Back in episodes 56 and 57, I talked about a security flaw that was found on the website of the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, or DESE as it is called. The flaw concerned a website where the general public could look up relevant information about teachers, things such as their educational and certification histories. In other words, things that are completely relevant to a concerned parent or a concerned citizen who wants to know who the schools have hired to educate their children. It's a great idea in theory. In practice, however, the website had a massive fatal flaw, which is that in the HTML of the pages, the personally identifiable information of the teachers was sent to the end user's computer, things like social security numbers and dates of birth. It is not displayed, but it is sent, and getting it as a single keystroke away, or if you prefer, you can right-click and pick it from a context menu. Go back and listen to episode 56 if you want to hear the details. The story starts at 7 minutes 30 into the episode. I just want to give you enough of a recap here to jog everybody's memory to what I'm talking about. Well, as you heard the governor say a minute ago, the investigation is over and it's now in the hands of the prosecutor. Hopefully the prosecutor has got more sense than the governor. Let's hear what else he had to say.
But let me just make sure that the media understands this, and especially the public listening today.
All right, you're not equipped to give anyone an understanding. You need to have one first.
Did a person commit the offense of tampering with computer data if he or she knowingly, without permission, went in there and got information? That's been admitted to. That's a fact of that.
Is that so? No. I don't think it is. You see, this is like somebody gave you some records that you were entitled to, but redacted them by putting a sticky note over the parts you shouldn't have.
Number two, disclosure or takes data, which has been admitted. Yes, we done that. We admitted to that.
Okay. A very literal interpretation of the incident demands it. So yes, you can have this one.
Two, either discloses or looks into passwords of how to get in there. Identifying codes, taking personal identification out of the system, which happened, which they done, which they admitted to.
Did they, though? I'm sure they saw them, but did they keep them? Did they publish it? I don't think so.
Then having the access to a computer that you don't have a right to be in, or a computer network, and intentionally examines information about another person.
Sorry, wrong answer. This was a public-facing website, and there was no intention to examine the information at the outset. No.
And last and finally, removes that information and shares that information.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's still there, so it hasn't been removed now, has it? And it would be irresponsible to share it.
The point of it is we never want to allow people to have personal information like this took place.
Well, he's right. That's exactly the reason why the website should not be handing it out. And let me emphasize this word, unsolicited. The website gave this information out unsolicited. This information was given out by the website without the user asking for it. The user didn't even want it.
For people listed at home, I'll try to make this as common sense as layman as I can. If somebody picks your lock on your house, for whatever reason, it's not a good lock, it's a cheap lock, or whatever problem you might have, they do not have the right to go into your house and take anything that belongs to you.
All right, stop right there. Nobody picked any lock. The door was wide open and the wind was blowing the contents out onto the street. If you saw that, wouldn't you try to let someone know?
And whether it be the media or anyone else, does not have the right to go get your private information, share that information, and keep that information from you.
All right, he's right on this. This is, of course, why he shouldn't be giving it out willy-nilly.
That's why this is important, to make sure that we don't allow people to do that.
Again, absolutely right. He could start by directing DESE's IT department to build systems that don't allow people to do that. Now, lest any of you think I only pick on Republican governors for being daft, let me show you otherwise. Here's our Democratic governor here in New York, Kathy Hochul.
New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. This is happening everywhere. And so just to remind New Yorkers that we're not unique in this. We are being hit very hard, without a doubt, but this is also a national phenomenon, a global phenomenon, in fact.
She is, of course, talking about COVID, specifically the Omicron variant. Back in episode 50, I spoke about our governor's resistance to the idea that state office workers should be able to work from home where feasible. In episode 46, I mentioned that, if nothing else, the COVID pandemic has demonstrated once and for all that this is feasible. I'm thinking that the governor is not listening to herself. If she did, she would realize that, especially in light of what she just said about the Omicron variant, the state workers, which includes some of my friends and family, people I care about, the state workers who can work from home should be doing so. Let's knock this pandemic down by doing something sensible and efficient. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Thanks to Evil Midweek Cutie, Mystere 73, and Thriller at Play for bringing stories to my attention, and to Fongaboo for allowing me the use of a sample of his voice.
Stop all the downloading.
Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. And our theme music is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email, critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. As of this writing, the data for 2020...